This is Geology Bites with Oliver Strimple. Most of us think of the solar system as the Sun plus a set of planets in orbit around it. But that leaves out the asteroid belt, a region lying between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter, which contains billions and billions of asteroids, ranging in size from pebbles to dwarf planets. It turns out that asteroids can tell us a great deal about the origin of the Earth, in many ways, more than we can learn by looking at the other planets, such as Venus and Mars. Sarah Russell is Professor of Planetary Sciences and leader of the Planetary Materials Group at the Natural History Museum in London. Using asteroids as snapshots of the early solar system, her research seeks to unravel how the solar system formed and answer questions such as how the Earth got its water and organic materials. She even has an asteroid named after her. Sarah Russell, welcome to Geology Bites.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Oliver.
What are the asteroids?
So an asteroid is basically a rocky body that is in orbit around our Sun. And we can differentiate it from comets, which are the other small bodies that go around the Sun, in that comets tend to be much more icy, full of volatile materials, and they originated further out in the outermost reaches of the solar system, but have eccentric orbits, so they come towards the inner solar system where we can see them. And in contrast, asteroids are made almost entirely of rocky materials. That means silica-based minerals and metals and things like that. And we can distinguish both asteroids and comets from meteorites, which is any natural extraterrestrial material that lands on the surface of the Earth.
So some of the things that land on the Earth then are not asteroids at all?
No, meteorites can be anything. So actually, the vast majority are pieces of asteroids, which is brilliant for those of us who are interested in asteroids. But also some meteorites are pieces of the Moon, and some are pieces of Mars, and some we just don't know what they are. So there's a whole variety of stuff that falls from space for us to try to figure out.
So why are asteroids concentrated just in a region between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter?
Yeah, and we think the answer to that goes right back to the beginning of the solar system. So the solar system formed from a disk of dust and gas that was orbiting around the evolving young Sun. And these bits of dust gradually accreted together to make larger and larger pebbles and then boulders and larger objects until they eventually formed the planets that we see today. And Jupiter is the biggest planet in our solar system. It formed very early on. And Jupiter was so massive that it caused all sorts of forces in this area between Mars and Jupiter that kept forcing these bodies apart and caused them to be quite energetic and have lots of impacts. And that means that no planet could form in that region. So now we just see this debris of this material from the early solar system, which is now our asteroid belt.
As I mentioned in the introduction, there are billions of asteroids, and if they're concentrated, are they like the artist impressions that often show them as pretty close packed in space?
No. So if you see a sci-fi film when they go through an asteroid belt, you can see these pictures, right, of loads of boulders all over the place crashing into the astronaut's spaceship. But actually, it's not like that. So you'd get one boulder and then the next one will be thousands and thousands of miles away. There's a lot of space out there. So even though there's a lot of asteroids, they're not all that densely packed. And all of the spacecraft that have gone to the outer solar system, like New Horizons and Voyager, they've all gone through the asteroid belt with absolutely no problem at all. So that shows they're actually not very densely packed at all.
There are several different types of asteroid.
Yeah, there are several different types of asteroids. So we can investigate this from Earth, looking at the spectral features of the asteroids.
I presume these are features that appear in the spectra of the near-infrared and visible light reflected by the asteroids.
Yes, and from that kind of work, we know that there's an amazing compositional diversity of asteroids. So some asteroids are very rich in carbon, some seem to be rocky, some seem to be made of basalt, much like the surface of the Earth, some are made of metal. We know the largest asteroid in the asteroid belt series has got an ice volcano on it. So there's an amazing diversity of different compositions across the asteroid belt. And yeah, it's one of the fun things about studying asteroids is actually they're much more diverse in composition than the inner planets, for example.
So what accounts for this diversity?
We don't know in detail, but it could be that in the earliest times in the solar system, the giant planets Jupiter and Saturn were actually migrated. They moved in and out of the protoplanetary disk, and that could have disrupted small bodies that were forming in other regions. So it could cause, for example, bodies that were rich in volatiles that formed in the outer solar system to be thrown into the inner solar system. So we end up with this mismatch of loads and loads of different bodies that actually formed different parts of the solar system. And also, depending on how big they are, they have very different histories. So a lot of asteroids seem to have not changed at all since the beginning of the solar system, but others have undergone some geology, and so they've changed since they first formed.
How can asteroids actually then tell us anything about the Earth?
In lots of ways, Oliver. So in some ways, the Earth has kind of forgotten about its early history, because on Earth, there's so much geology going on. Everything's been mushed up and mixed and melted. But many of these asteroids have not changed since the beginning of the solar system. And so they tell us something about the primordial material that all the planets, including the Earth, came from. So the majority of asteroidal meteorites that we have to study on Earth, if we look at them in detail, they've never melted, and they're made up of particles of different sizes all mished up together. And these particles, some of them formed at very high temperatures and some of them formed at low temperatures. So that's telling us that the solar system formed from this dust cloud where there were lots of different environments and lots of different things got mixed up together. And this was probably the primordial material that made the Earth. And looking at these asteroidal meteorites, we can learn how old the Earth is, because we think they formed at the same time as the Earth, and they can tell us that the Earth was about 4.5 billion years old. And we can even unpick the components and look at how long these particles existed in the protoplanetary dusty disk.
And we get these ages from radiometric dating methods, most commonly using the decay of uranium to lead, just as we do for the Earth's rocks.
Mm-hmm.
So you said that among the different kinds
of asteroid,
there are the kinds that are rocky and the kinds that are more metallic. And the ones that seem to be more metallic, what happened to the rocky stuff? Did they just never have it to begin with, or did it vaporize when they melted?
Yes, as I said, so most asteroids, we think, never melted at all. And they just are made of this primordial stuff that the solar system was made of. But there are some asteroids that seem to be made mostly of metal, and we see these in our meteorite collections. We have meteorites that are made of iron nickel alloy, and we think that these formed from asteroids that became big enough and had enough heat in them that they melted. And when they melted, the iron in them sank down to form a core. And so they had a core of metal, and then that was surrounded by igneous rocky material. And actually, in our meteorite collections, we also have samples of this differentiated igneous rocky material that made up the mantle or crust of these asteroids. But one of the kind of weird things in meteorite science is that we have basaltic meteorites, which would have been the crust of these asteroids, but we don't really have so much of the mantle material. And so we have this missing mantle, and we don't really know what happened to it. So it could have been, as you say, that it was vaporized during impacts in the asteroid belt, and we've just lost that record. But the iron-rich cores are more resilient to impacts, and so maybe they survive better. And so maybe that's why we see so many of these. But the iron-rich meteorites are interesting because they might provide an analog to the Earth's core. We know that the Earth has gone through this process of heating and melting and forming a metal core. But we can't access our own Earth's core to look at what the composition is, but we can use these iron meteorites as some kind of analogy to what might have happened during Earth differentiation.
That's interesting. So the metallic ones are like a naked core that we can actually look at.
Yeah, well, that's what we're thinking, yeah. Though actually there's a space mission called Psyche that's going to visit one of these metal-rich asteroids, and that should provide some clues about their origin and see if that is the case.
So if the Earth was hot enough to melt metal and have it sink down to form a core, how did it get to be covered with water?
Well, so we can also thank asteroids for that, because many asteroids contain quite a lot of water, and they contain a lot of organic material as well. And the Earth has been continuously bombarded with asteroidal meteorites since its formation. And in the early stages of the solar system, the impact rate would have been even higher when the solar system was a more energetic and chaotic kind of place. And so after the Earth had differentiated, the water that's created the Earth's oceans could have been brought there by meteorite impacts.
That's a hell of a lot of meteorites.
Well, I don't think it's... I mean, we look at the Earth from space and it looks like a watery planet, right? Because two-thirds of the Earth is covered in water. And that water, from a human perspective, these look like really deep oceans. But from a planetary perspective, this is a very, very thin skin on the surface of the planet. So there's not... From a planetary bulk composition perspective, there's not that much water, whereas meteorites can contain loads of water. So carbonaceous chondrites, which seem to be the predominant flux of material for at least very tiny particles, they can contain up to 20% water in the form of clay minerals. So they contain these clays that can trap water in their structure. And so they can actually deliver huge amounts of water to the Earth that way.
We're actually in a very exciting time from an asteroid point of view, because there are two missions currently underway to fetch samples from the surface of two different asteroids and return it to Earth. And you're a member of the science team for both of them.
Yes, so the two currently in-flight missions, there's a Japanese one called Hayabusa 2, which has already collected a sample from its asteroid Rugu, and it's on its way back to Earth now. It's going to return to Earth in December 2020. And the other mission is a NASA mission called OSIRIS-REx, and that is currently in orbit around the asteroid Bennu, and it's going to collect a sample next month in October 2020, and then it's due back to Earth in 2023.
How big are these asteroids?
They're not very big at all. So Rugu, the target for Hayabusa 2, is about a kilometre across. And Bennu, the target for OSIRIS-REx, is about 500 metres across. So it's kind of about the size of a skyscraper, really. It's not very big in the grand scheme of things. But that's what makes it really exciting, because the smaller it is, the more likely it is to have this primordial material and not have too much geology have happened to it. So it's more likely to be a pristine sample of the early solar system.
And do these things have enough gravity to hold a space probe in orbit around them?
Well, they only have a teeny tiny fraction of the gravity of Earth, because they're such tiny bodies. So OSIRIS-REx, for example, it is in orbit around Bennu, but to be in orbit around Bennu, it has to be super, super close. So it's only about a kilometre away from the centre of the asteroid. So it actually has the world record for being the closest orbiting satellite around a body. So it's an incredible feat of the rocket scientists and the engineers to have actually managed to successfully put this spacecraft in orbit around this tiny rock.
And then it's actually going to go down to the surface to scoop up a little bit.
Yes. So this is the most dramatic moment of the mission, perhaps. So it's going to go down to the surface, and it has a kind of reverse vacuum cleaner. So a blast of gas will be pointed at the surface of Bennu, and that will disrupt the loose rocks and fragments on the surface of the asteroid, which will then get captured into the collection capsule and then hopefully brought back to Earth for us to take a look at.
So what are we hoping to learn from these samples that will be returned with great difficulty to Earth?
Yeah, so I spent my career studying meteorites, and mostly meteorites that come from asteroids. And these missions are like the dream for scientists like me, because we love our meteorites. But the problem with meteorites is that they fall on Earth. We don't really know where they've come from. We don't have a chance to do field work like terrestrial geologists do. We can't choose the samples that we get. We just get whatever lands on Earth. But these missions are the chance for us to look at a sample of a primordial asteroidal body that we think came from the very earliest times in the solar system, that will tell us about the origins of our solar system. And it will tell us that with the global geological perspective of all the mapping that these missions have been doing at the same time. So it will really give us some geological and astronomical context of these samples, which is so important to try to learn about their origins.
Will it be like the so-called ground truth that we have with these Earth missions, where We have lots of pictures of the Earth, but to be able to correlate the two, you actually have to go down to the bit that you're looking at and grab a bit of it. Is that going to enable you to link what we get back from Bennu with, well, some of the asteroids that are in your collection, and then you can just say, oh, well, those definitely came from asteroids?
Absolutely. So the Hayabusa 2 mission is actually, as you might expect from the name, it's the second asteroid return mission that the Japanese have done. And the first asteroid return mission, Hayabusa, went to a type of asteroid called the S-type asteroids that we'd always suspected were similar to a type of meteorite in our collection called ordinary chondrites, but we didn't know for sure. And it was only when we had that sample return that we could make that connection definitively. And that then enables us to understand our meteorite collections much, much better. So, yeah, one of the important things about these missions is that they help us to understand not just meteorites that look identical to these rocks, but they'll help us understand our whole meteorite collection. And the other thing it will help us do is to understand the diversity of asteroids that we can observe from Earth, because it will ground truth our spectral data, so that it will help us to have that one connection of, we have a sample on Earth and we can also see it in space. That will help us to calibrate looking at all of asteroids and small bodies in our solar system.
How did we select Bennu out of all the thousands of asteroids we could have picked?
One big reason that it was picked is because it's what we call a C-type asteroid, which we think contain organic material. And one of the main aims of the mission is to learn about organics in the solar system and how they may have come to Earth and seeded life on Earth, and tell us about our origins as Earthlings, how we got our water and what it can tell us about the formation of the Earth. So the type of asteroid was very important. And the other thing that was very important was where it was. So Bennu is a near-Earth asteroid. And so it's not in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. It probably was once, but it's been knocked out into an orbit that's much closer to the Earth's orbit around the Sun. So that makes it much more accessible and much easier for us to go there and sample it.
There's something else that I think you mentioned to me when we were talking earlier, that by studying the details of the albedo,
that is, the fraction of the incident radiation that is reflected by the surface of the asteroid,
we can tell in detail what its future orbit is going to be. And we really care about that because it has a finite chance of colliding with the Earth.
Oh, yes, of course. That's another important reason for looking at Bennu and near-Earth asteroids in general. So we know on Earth that we do get hit by asteroids. Sometimes they're big asteroids and can do a huge amount of damage on Earth, but we want to understand that risk as well as we can. And one of the ways that we can do that is to study asteroids like Bennu in details. So Bennu is a potentially hazardous asteroid in that it's got a tiny probability of hitting the Earth in about 200 years' time. But what we want to do is try to make our calculations about whether it's likely to hit or not a bit more precise. And we can do that by making very precise measurements of its albedo and the heterogeneity of the asteroid and so on. And that will help us to understand what's called the Yarkovsky effect, which is an effect on small bodies of solar radiation pushing them. It's a very, very gentle force, but it's something that we need to understand to be able to have accurate models of how the orbits of these objects are going to evolve over the next centuries.
This Yarkovsky effect that you mentioned is to do with solar radiation pressure, which depends in turn on the albedo, which is how much of the incident solar radiation gets reflected, and therefore how much it pushes on the asteroid and changes its orbit.
So if Bennu did wind up hitting the Earth in some catastrophe now, how would that compare with the asteroid that we think hit the Earth 66 million years ago and caused the extinction of the dinosaurs and much of life?
Yeah, well, I was going to say a great thing about asteroids, but another interesting thing about asteroids is they do have this capacity to cause global destruction. And the last time that happened, of course, was about 66 million years ago, when an asteroid impacted off the coast of Mexico in Chicxulub. And we think this impact caused massive devastation and mass extinctions of the dinosaurs and other animals. But then that led to the rise of the mammals and eventually to humans. So these catastrophic events do change the course of evolution, but they can sometimes change them in potentially interesting ways. So we think an asteroid about a kilometre in size, that's about the size of Rugu, if that hits the Earth, that would cause global devastation, will have catastrophic global effects. So that's the target of the very worst level of impact. And we think such a globally destructive impact might happen about once every 100 million years or so. So it's not something that's likely to happen on our watch, but it can happen, and it probably will happen over the 4 or 5 billion years that the Earth has got remaining to exist. So it's something that we're interested in mapping, what near-Earth asteroids might be potentially hazardous and how hazardous they might be.
So for my last question, I want to ask you, if you had unlimited resources for your research, how would you use them?
Right, I love that question. So if I had unlimited resources, what I think I would love to do, I love sample return missions for all the reasons that we've talked about. Actually going into space and bringing a sample back that we can study in the lab tells us so much about the origins and age and characteristics of this object. So it would have to be a sample return mission that would bring stuff back to Earth for us to have in our collections. And the places that I would love to get a sample from are these interstellar interlopers. So a couple of years ago, the first interstellar asteroid stroke comet was observed coming into our solar system, called Oumuamua. So we don't know where it came from. It came into our solar system and then it disappeared off again. But having a sample of something that is from beyond our solar system could tell us so much about our place in the galaxy, whether there's anything peculiar about our solar system that led to the evolution of life and ultimately us, or whether we're very common. And that is the one thing that we could do so much science on, to learn about not only our solar system, but the universe beyond us.
Sarah Russell, thank you very much.
Oliver, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and thanks very much for including me in your podcasts.
For more about Geology Bites, as well as pictures and diagrams that illustrate this podcast, you can go to geologybites.com.